This is a download from Nature Publishing Group.
Hello, and welcome to this special podcast from Nature on the Eppendorf Young Investigator Award. Every year since 1995, Eppendorf has awarded the prize in partnership with Nature to a young European scientist to reward them for their outstanding research in biomedical science. Last year, we celebrated the work of Madeleine Lancaster from the Institute of Molecular Biotechnology of the Austrian Academy of Sciences in Vienna for her work using pluripotent stem cells to create mini brains in a test tube. This year sees the 20th anniversary of the award, and the panel chose Thomas Wallet from the Max Planck Institute of Biochemistry in Martinsried, Germany. Thomas was awarded the prize of €20,000 for his work in understanding the basic processes behind a cell's waste disposal system by reconstituting it in the test tube. I travelled to Heidelberg to attend the award ceremony held at the city's European Molecular Biology Laboratory Advanced Training Centre. Thomas and I sat down before the event to talk about his research.
Congratulations on being awarded this year's prize. How did it feel when you found out that you won?
That came as a big surprise to me, so it's a great honor, and it's of course a major recognition of our work, and not only my work, but also the work that my lab has done during the past 5 years, and this is very important to me.
So for the benefit of our listeners, tell us a little bit about what research you're working on.
The cells of our bodies, they're recycling almost everything, they don't wasting much. And the question in the past has been, how is this achieved? And this needs to be very highly regulated. You don't want to degrade something that you still need, but you want to get rid of dangerous material that accumulates in the cell as well as in our houses, for example. We got interested in one pathway which is involved in transporting this sort of trash or unwanted material to recycling stations in the cell. And we are interested in the molecular mechanism. How is this driven by this molecular machine?
What sort of molecular trash are we talking about?
Regarding the cargo, everything that a cell needs to degrade it have to end up at a certain recycling station. And if a protein becomes aggregated, for example, or if you have bigger material, composite structures, everything else in the cytoplasm, like mitochondria, needs to be transported to the lysosome. And there's a specialized pathway to do that, which has been termed autophagy for self-digestion. And they realized that there are some crescent-shaped membranes, and it expanded and captured just cytoplasm. These structures in the end became autophagosomes, which are like entire organelles. And those autophagosomes are then the transport containers, which are transporting this trash to the lysosomes for degradation.
So how do these autophagosomes form in the cell?
So in yeast, the system is fairly well understood that small membranes are recruited and they are fusing and then they are forming this crescent-shaped membrane. And then the structure expands and captures and surrounds the material. And in the end, it closes and then the full autophagosome is fusing with the lysosome. And there are 40 different proteins in yeast which have been identified to play a very important function in autophagy. They are specific for the autophagic pathway. And the question was really, what are they doing with the membrane and what is their molecular function? And that was the major interest of my lab then, and we focused on that.
What did you discover?
So we basically analyzed two important steps in autophagy. The first is initiation and the second is expansion. So initiation means that an autophagosome is built from small vesicles that, which are coming together and fuse. And this initial step is driven by one big complex, and it's called the ATG1 kinase complex. And this ATG1 kinase complex has been known for a while to be involved in recruiting donor vesicles, which are coming together, fusing to give rise to this autophagosome. And then just recently published work involved the expansion step. And this is a very interesting step because it involves a small ubiquitin-like molecule, ATG8. And the unique thing with this particular ubiquitin-like molecule is that it gets covalently attached to a new forming organelle. And it's fairly a lot of ATGA that gets conjugated to those membranes. And the question has been, why is there so much of this molecule on the membrane? And what is its job there? We use isolated proteins, just remove them from this complex cellular environment, and we try to combine it in a test tube with its core components and analyze the function. And this core components is, at the one hand side, in our case, it's the proteins, which are building up molecular machines and are driving certain processes. And on the other hand, it's membranes, which are serving as the platform for proteins to assemble and then to capture the cargo. And we reconstituted this entire machine, and then we analyzed it using biophysical methods. And what we realized and what came to as a surprise to us was that this machinery, which brings this molecule to the membrane and drives this unique linkage between protein and membrane, this machinery stays at the membrane. And we predicted that something needs to happen, some bigger structure needs to form on the membrane to stabilize this protein there. That was basically then the step towards identifying membrane code or a scaffolding complex. So we took high-resolution approaches, and what we observed was that there's a striking structure being formed. It's like a meshwork, which is sitting on top of the membrane, which is stabilizing the autophagosome, presumably.
Why do you say presumably?
Because the details how this expansion is driven by this scaffold, that is still something that we are currently investigating.
So is this something that you're going to be following up on over the next few years to really try and understand how this system and this structure is formed?
Yes, this is a very interesting question, and that is not an easy question to answer, because you need to get the direct relationship how this really works in vivo.
Now, how does that system then absorb your unwanted material from the cell?
So the selection of cargo comes in two flavors. So autophagosomes, under normal conditions, if a cell is happy, the cell only wants to degrade unwanted material or something that got damaged. And then it selects those material quite selectively. That means it only wants to degrade, for example, mitochondrium, this power plant that is disrupted or somehow non-functional anymore. And then the membrane wraps around the structure tightly. So there's a physical link, which is also provided by this small molecule, ATG8, which is not only a scaffolding component on the one hand side, but it's also a tether, which tethers this cargo tightly to the membrane. This is very selective and highly regulated. But if a cell gets stressed and or a cell starves, then the cell switches. It can then use those structures, those autophagosomes, to degrade anything that's surround. That means bulk cytoplasm without any selectivity anymore. And then you can imagine a big happy cell is starving, and then it's doing a certain diet and it has not much nutrition available, and then it shrinks, but it survives. And if nutrition conditions are getting better, then the cell is still alive and can grow again.
What's the bigger impact that this is going to have?
The hot focus or the hot spot in research is at the moment at neurodegenerative diseases and in cancer. In neurodegenerative diseases, some proteins just accumulate, and there are a couple of diseases where certain modifications in the genes which encode a protein lead to a version of the protein which tends to aggregate. This is, for example, the case in Huntington's disease. And there's other diseases where also proteins accumulate, like in Alzheimer's diseases. And those protein oligomers or those aggregates, they are toxic for the cell. And it has been observed that in a number of those diseases, it's advantageous for cells, for patients, to have increased autophagy, because increasing autophagy would remove those material. And the benefit for neurodegenerative diseases is, if you think about the disease, it's usually observed or the diagnosis is late in the development of the disease, so material has already accumulated. So if you could remove this harmful material from cells, you could maybe rescue some neurons from dying. And in cancer, it has already been shown that combining chemotherapy with blocking autophagy, with an inhibitor of autophagy, is very beneficial because autophagy just counteracts chemotherapy.
So what is it about this field of research that excites you so much and that you find so interesting?
What excites me most is if you can use a very minimal system, very few components, you combine them and then they are doing their job in the test tube. Our major goal and the holy grail of our research would be to put all the components together step by step to produce an autophagosome from small membranes and having some material which is enwrapped by this autophagosome and to have the full pathway in the test tube.
That was Thomas Wallett. I also spoke to Professor Reinhard Jahn from the Max Planck Institute for Biophysical Chemistry in Göttingen, Germany. He's the chairman of the judging panel, a group which he's been involved with for almost 10 years. For the benefit of our listeners, would you mind reminding us what the criteria are for being awarded the Eppendorf Young Investigator Prize?
We like to select young scientists with an age no more than 35 years who have done outstanding work at least in two phases of their career, and where this outstanding work has already been carried out in an independent manner. So independence does not necessarily mean that one has to have a group on its on his or her own, but it would mean that if you do this as a postdoc, that there is a, let's say, sufficient independence and own creativity being documented for being eligible.
So Thomas Wallett was awarded the prize this year. And what was it about his research in autophagy that made it really stand out for yourself and the rest of the judging panel?
Well, first of all, it was a really amazing achievement autophagy is a very heavily investigated field, but the biochemical mechanisms, exactly what's going on and how these complexes are being formed on the membrane and what they do to membranes, have mostly eluded scientists, and it really requires very rigorous and painstaking biochemistry to address these issues. And Thomas Wallett has really taken up the task, which is very high risk, to try to reconstitute these events, membrane interactions, membrane binding, in a purified way, with purified proteins. And he has succeeded in making a first major inroad and showing the feasibility of the whole approach.
And how do you think this prize will impact his future career?
Well, it certainly will increase his visibility, and we have seen it in the past that the visibility of this award is quite significant. And this increase of visibility will certainly alert senior colleagues who are, you know, involved in organizing meetings, in, let's say, appointment committees and so on. So it will certainly help his career.
You've mentioned that you've seen the impact that this award has in the past. Well, the past is now officially 20 years long. It's the 20th anniversary of the Eppendorf Young Investigator Award this year. So looking back, how has the award changed over the last two decades and where do you see it going in the future?
Well, I think the award needs to follow the field, and I think the basic grand idea of the award has not changed. We want to really identify outstanding and highly promising young scientists who have made achievements in young years, original ideas, taking chances, being entrepreneurial, not necessarily following the beaten path. And this is exactly what we want to also honor in the future. And we hope that we will be able to continue doing this in the coming years.
So what advice do you have for any future applicants?
Well, what I can do is I can actually encourage young scientists to apply more, because we still could have more applications. For instance, when I consider all those top scientists, young scientists who submit applications for the ERC as a starting grant, I think there are many interesting candidates who would also qualify for the award, and I can only encourage them to just, you know, take it up and submit their application.
That was Reinhard Jahn. That's all from this special podcast from Nature. Tune in next year when we'll be celebrating the 21st Eppendorf Young Investigator Award. Until then, I'm Julie Gould. Thanks for listening.
The Eppendorf Award for Young European Investigators is presented to young scientists for outstanding achievements in the field of biomedical research. For more information, please go to eppendorf.com/award.